This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome home, Milers, and welcome back to another episode of Mickey Miles and More, a podcast where three friends talk about the Disney parks, the Disney races, and whatever else comes up. I'm Chris Eliopoulos, and before Michelle even says anything, I'm going to mention the fact that... Oh, she's starting. What do you play? Oh, she's trying to play the music. You can't really hear it, but she's playing Bruno. Even though we know Surface Pressure is a much better song. So you're trying very hard.
Hello, Christopher.
Hi, hello. Dr. S. I just wanted to say real quick before we get started that... next week, I have two books coming out, so I'm going to plug them. There are I Am Muhammad Ali and I Am Malala Yousafzai, two wonderful stories that I think your kids would really enjoy. It'll be out next Tuesday, so be sure to run out and pick them up and pay for my kids' college education. But anyway, Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean,
yes.
How are you doing besides playing really... Look, I like Bruno. I like the song.
We don't talk about Bruno.
I will. Okay, then good. We can talk about Surface Pressure, which is a better song.
Now, Chris made a statement that he liked Surface Pressure better on Facebook, and then mm-hmm. I said nope, and he said he was going to ban me.
I don't know. I don't hear anybody talking on the other end of this. I don't know what you people are talking about.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I listened to the Spanish version. I listened to the English version. I can't get enough of it. Can't get enough. I just don't really that other song. Although I like that character, it doesn't do it for me. So, well, do we have a tiebreaker here?
Well, with us is the Dean of Disney, Mike Scopa. And when I asked him what his favorite Encanto song was, he said, "I'm not going to throw away my shot." So I think he's totally out of the picture. He doesn't know where he is.
I think that they both have their merits. I think that the thing with Bruno is that it's the choreography that goes along with the song. I think that's the draw of that song. It goes through different stages and different changes, and I think that's what makes it really popular with a lot of people.
You like the end too, when they're all singing their own verse at the dinner table.
Oh, and there's a lot of things happening. Yeah. It's really, you know, it's really it's amazing how quickly it caught up. But the thing is that when did we see Encanto? Like about a month and a half
ago.
Yeah, and all of a sudden it's catching up.
Yeah, I didn't.
I'm sure that's going to be the big song at the Emmy Awards. You know.
Yeah, I didn't feel like they had a lot of promotion for it, right? Like I didn't see a lot of promotion before the movie came out, and it was sort of like I was like, oh, it must be really bad if they're not promoting it. And then I think it was like word of mouth. Plus it's Disney Plus. People going something new. I'm already paying for it. Might as well watch the movie.
I saw it in the theaters.
Did you?
We saw it in the theaters. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But it was pretty much soon after available on Disney Plus. It wasn't very long. Yeah, I thought it was.
We have the AMC A list, so you get to go to as many, 12 movies a month if you want to.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
For $24 or something like that. So
rather than pay $114, 12 movies or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But speaking of Disney Plus, I wanted to talk a little bit about, look, I'm the Star Wars nerd of the group and you guys sort of play along. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the book without Boba Fett that's been on.
It's interesting. You are my go-to person. But for me, it's like somebody speaking a different language and you may be the biggest fan, but I love watching The Mandalorian and and Boba Fett. But it's like I don't know what the hell's going on half the time. I'm still very amused by the whole thing. But then I recognize these people. But Boba Fett has been interesting because I've been a little bored by it until the last 2 weeks. So
yeah, that's why I called.
I don't think Mike knows a lot about this. I mean, about the lands and the people, because I'll ask him and he doesn't know.
Yeah, I think the thing with Boba Fett as opposed to the Mandalorian is Boba Fett is just doing fan service like crazy. Everybody loved Boba Fett from the movies. So the idea of what happens to him afterward is like that big thing. And they wanted to know how he escaped the Sarlacc pit and what did they do? And then they expand on the Tusken Raiders. And it was kind of boring. It's like, it's, you know, I from a story perspective,
yeah,
that mysterious villain or hero, you don't want to know their backstory. It makes them boring. Indiana Jones in the first movie was great because you didn't know anything of his past. You didn't know what was going on, what he knew, who he knew. He had people, you know, he meet people and he knew them for years, but you'd never get that story of how they met. And then in the last movie, you basically get his whole past in like a 15-minute train ride and cave exploration. And it makes the character more boring when you find out, you know, where he comes from. Same thing with Boba Fett. When you start to see all the stuff that he was going through, you're just like, well, that doesn't live up to what I had in my head. And I think they probably knew it. The creators, you know, Favreau and Filoni knew after 4 episodes that it was not working at all. And so if you look at the 5th episode, again, spoilers, here we go. It was all Mandalorian. It was basically Mandalorian season 2.5.
Fourth and fifth, right? Or fifth and sixth.
The fifth and sixth.
Yeah.
And then, so they went through the Mandalorian, and that was a great episode. And I was like, wow, the best episode of Boba Fett is without Boba Fett. and then this previous episode was just over the top fan service, right? I mean, it's Luke is back training. You get to see Ahsoka, which everybody loves that character. I forget the character that ends up at the end, that bounty hunter dude, is part of like one of the animated shows. I never saw it. But
the guy
everybody
who
was
look like the gunslinger.
Yeah, right. Like the red eyed guy, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, that was really cool.
It was great. It was also like I remember like it obviously meant something and they were playing to the fans. I just didn't know who he was. And I think that's, you know, when you start to do fan service, you got to remember that besides the fans, you have to reach out to people like Mike who don't know what this means or who this character is. And
Mike doesn't even know that it was Rosario Dawson.
Oh, I know. It was,
you did? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. It's the last 2 episodes were interesting. I think the actor who plays Boba Fett is very good. Mm-hmm. It just like, oh boy, this is super, super dull. So I guess the way that you make it not dull is to bring back Luke and to bring back Grogu. In The Mandalorian.
And I always get a kick out of when we were first introduced to Luke Skywalker, he was like Richie Cunningham from Happy Days. And now he's Mr. Reserved, you know.
Well, he grew up.
Chainmail, or do you want the lightsaber? You know.
Well, I think that's the point, right? I mean, he grew, and by the end of Return of the Jedi, he became a master. Yeah.
Weren't all the Jedis like that? Like, calm down and consider your options. And well, I don't know. I thought the CGI of Luke was pretty good. There were only a few times when I thought,
You know what it is?
I thought it was really good.
I think they still have
and
to
they
work.
They had Mark Hamill doing the voice.
Right. And he sounded like young Mark Hamill, like not, you know, today's Mark Hamill. But
gravelly voice, yeah.
Yeah. I think the only thing that what was funny is, with the last episode of The Mandalorian, and they did that, you know, Luke deepfake, it wasn't the best. It was okay. Somebody, like a fan or something, did a version and posted it on YouTube, and it was better than the one in the show. And they actually hired him to come in and help them with this now, so which is hysterical. Like, you know, they brought in the fans. I think the biggest issue they have is the mouth. When the character speaks, it looks like he's had shots of Novocaine and he can't move his lips very well and they don't kind of work well. But I thought, you know, look, this was everything I wanted. Like, as this was my Star Wars, like I want the adventures of Luke Skywalker, you know, running through the galaxy. Like I wanted that after Return of the Jedi. So though that's my selfish needs. And they're playing to me on this one. It wasn't like a fully fleshed out story. Like, it was just sort of like, here's a scene of Luke and here's a scene of Mandalorian and then here's Boba Fett for 2 seconds and then back to Luke. And But it was better than
the first throwback of, you know, Luke was trained by Yoda. Now Yoda is training. I mean, now Luke is training somebody who looks like Yoda.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's going to be a name that you're going to laugh at me. I don't know that when they were that little sphere thing that was shocking, Grogu.
Yeah.
And he was jumping around. I don't know what it's called, but that happened in the other Star Wars movies too. So it was a nice kind of connection for the fans to see that again, to see it sort of come full circle.
Everything about it. There was a lot of throwbacks to previous, like even the training, like Luke does a flip that matches the one from Empire Strikes Back, and you know, do not try, you have to do, which is the Yoda thing. And there were a lot of kind of, you know, callbacks. But like I said, the last two episodes have been so much better. I was giving up on the show, but I'm there for the finale.
You would watch it anyway.
I would totally watch it, but I wasn't there, like, in terms of, like, I would forget that it was on Wednesday mornings, and then somebody would post something, and I was like, oh, I gotta go watch that. Where in the past, like The Mandalorian or some of the Marvel shows, I would be like, first thing in the morning, you get up and you put it on and watch it. So, but I think it's worth. We're almost down to the last episode, so hopefully they finish it off. And
I think it's a great thing for Disney Plus. I mean, it's a great use of that service where you can sort of expand and do different things with different shows. But I don't know.
It might be blasphemous.
What is that too much?
Yeah, I was gonna say
it's
maybe
a lot blasphemous. To tie up.
I just hope they do a Luke Skywalker show. Maybe this is them testing out to see if it'll work, but it'd be fun to see if they can do it. If Mark Hamill is willing to voice it and they continue to do this, I guess he's okay with them basically just stealing his face, but
sure, they're not doing it for free.
True. I mean, he's definitely getting paid for it, but you know, that's a big thing. A lot of actors got to be careful of, right? I mean, having their faces used, like, they become unneeded after a while. You can have a computer do the acting, and you know, so we'll see. But I enjoyed it. So, but I think we could probably move on to some of the news of the parks and stuff like that. Like I said, I'm going to tell you a quick story, and Mike, maybe this will play into your conversations. I got a text message from a friend this morning who is planning or wants to go to Disney in September with her family. Her youngest is 4. So they haven't been there in like 5 years. And I guess she's just starting to investigate. And we always talk about the layman not knowing what's going on. And she was like, wait a minute, what happened to the Fast Pass? And I had to basically go through park reservations and the buses no longer being free and making sure you have dining because there's limited dining now and the Genie Plus system. And she just basically was horrified. And actually was considering not going. She kept asking questions, but she's like, why do I want to do this? So I figured, Mike, you've gotten some news items that we want to go through that might play into this, because I know Bob Chapek is trying to get some money. So,
well, you know, I can feel for anyone who hasn't been down for a few years, and we know that fast passes are gone, and what's this park reservation system, and what's Genie Plus, and what's Lightning Lane, and all this. So I think that the educated Disney guest is the essential Disney guest. And, you know, you have to really, really look into, you know, what's new and what isn't new. And, you know, listening to the podcast, the first thing I would say to anyone is make sure that you have my Disney experience, and, you know, you start from there. But there are a lot of things that are, that were turned off during COVID, and they were slowly being brought back online. And I think that this year we will see pretty much everything almost back to normal. One of the things that was set aside was parades, and those parades are going to be coming back. That Festival of Fantasy parade, that's coming back to the Magic Kingdom this next month, March 9th. I don't know how they're going to handle the crowds. The whole idea with turning off the parades and turning off the fireworks was to prevent the gathering of guests, which would possibly spread COVID. So you know, we'll see what happens. There are things that I'm scratching my head, but I know that the guests want. They're bringing back a lot of the character meet and greets. As a matter of fact, I just from looking, it looks like there will be more character meet and greets than before COVID. So,
but do you think they'll look the same way? People will be able to.
There will be no contact. Yeah. Like you can't. The little kids are not going to be able to hug Cinderella and things like that. There will be some distances, but they're opening that up. So that's coming back. And here's the funny thing. This is funny. Genie Plus will be part of that character meet and greet. You spend your $15 Genie Plus, and somehow it's going to be worked in with the meet and greets. But that's really an example of what I mean by things coming back. They're also trying to. You talked about the restaurants, Chris, and the dining issues. There's going to be a new restaurant in Toy Story Land this year. It's called Roundup Rodeo Barbecue. It's going to be, as soon as you walk into Toy Story Land, it's going to be on the left-hand side. I don't know if it's just going to be meat, Michelle. I'm not sure. So that's going to happen. Where we used to have the electric umbrella, that's going to be
What do you think barbecue means?
Well, I'm sure they're going to have alternate. I mean, they're not stupid, or are they? Because, you know, Bob Chapek probably wants to make sure that it's something for everybody. Do you remember the electric umbrella? That's going to be, that's going to reopen, and it's going to be called the Connections Cafe and Eatery. That will be opening in Epcot later this year. So a lot of those restaurants are going to be coming back. Flying Fish, Geco, Turf Club, they're all going to be opening this month, And also, speaking of reopening, there's one resort that has yet to reopen, and it'll reopen soon, and it's All-Star Sports. Once All-Star Sports opens, they're at 100%. Now, what does that mean for park capacity? I don't know. We talked about park capacity, Chris, when you were down there for race weekend, and we've seen a lot of people saying that, gee, you know, I'm still waiting in line for 45, 50, 75 minutes. I was looking at waiting times yesterday, and right around 10 o'clock, the parks start going crazy with lines. And it's the second week in, first week in February. And usually that's a very slow time. So yeah. I don't know what's going on. I really don't. I wanted to mention something. The Splash Mountain is closed, and I don't want people to think that they're retheming it. They're just doing a refurbishing. That's going to reopen soon, but it's not going to be rethemed yet. We're all waiting for that Tiana retheming. I just wanted to mention that. The only other two things that I thought would be interesting to mention to everybody is that the International Flower and Garden Festival this year begins March 2nd, runs through July 4th. That's 125 days. And it seems like 12 months out of the year, there's some kind of a festival going on. And that means those kiosks will remain around World Showcase year round, I guess.
And I'm okay with that.
No, I think that's
as long as they change them, you know, they make them little, like, reminds me of being in Austin, Texas, and food carts, you know, they're always changing. And I think it's a nice way to test out things. And
yeah, I think so too. And the last thing I wanted to mention, I know Chris will be really interested in this. The Disney Wish, which is the brand new Disney cruise ship.
Oh, really?
The maiden voyage has been delayed 1 month. That ship is currently in Germany. That's where it's being built. And thanks to Omicron, there has been a delay in completing the ship. So the maiden voyage, which was supposed to be in June, is now in July. So we'll see what happens with that. I think that kind of slipped by the cracks a couple of days ago or a week ago. And I just recently discovered that. So I thought I would pass that on. So that's,
well, especially with all what they're saying about stuff. What they've been saying about cruises and stuff, and how the government is sort of saying maybe we should not be doing these for a while still. Who knows? Maybe that's just sort of part of it. But
there's a lot of it seems like each cruise line has its own sort of set of protocols. I know that the Disney Cruise Line has this rule that if you have COVID within 90 days of your cruise, you have to show documentation that you've been testing since then, and you have to get tested before you go on. There's a lot of stuff going on. And as far as what cruise ships are like now with COVID, I'm sure it's quite different than before COVID, but we'll find out.
I saw a video of somebody went on a cruise just recently. And again, I don't know if this is true or not, because, you know, it's on the internet, so who knows? But there was a cruise ship, and I guess, you know, normally what they take, usually 2,000 plus people. And the person said there was only 150 people, guests, that went on the ship.
Wouldn't there be more staff on the ship than people?
Yeah, well, that's what I guess this person was showing, and they were showing video of, like, at the bar, and there's nobody there. And they said the great thing was that we were, like, the first to get off the boat when we were done. There was nobody there to get off. So I guess maybe some people are a little still too gun shy to go, but, you know.
Well, Chris, you know, you raise a good point, because we have been told that park capacity is less than 100%, so they say. And it would make sense that if that was the case, for reasons of protecting guests and staff, why would they not also do the same with cruise ships? But I don't know if they are doing that. I don't know if the Disney Cruise Line is, I don't know if the cruises are at 100% or not. I guess you could always go on Disney Cruise Line site and see if there's any openings a week or two before a cruise is ready to sail.
Well, I think they're a little bit more stringent too, right? They're requiring COVID tests, and they're requiring, you know, your cards and stuff like that, I believe. So it's a little bit more stringent than the Disney parks. But yeah, it was funny when I was talking to my friend this morning, and she had asked about it. And I was like, she's like, well, why do I have to pay $15 a person just to get on these rides? And I was trying to explain how it's like the old Fast Pass system, but you have to pay for it. And so you can't just get on every ride in a row. You sort of have to wait and schedule it as soon as one's done. And so she was like, oh, geez, that's like, but you don't have to wait that long, do you? And honestly, based on what we were saying last week, you know, everything was like an hour, 45 minutes to an hour to 90 minutes. You know, the choice is yours. I mean, you know, that's the problem. So the numbers don't play out unless the system is totally different, right? I mean, Mike, you would know better than me. Like, if their park capacity is not at 100% and yet the wait times are still this much, how is that possible?
The only answer that I would give is that I think that when the parks reopened, there was no fast pass and the lines were long. We did have virtual queues, and that, you know, kind of worked okay. But because you did not have fast pass, the standby lines were pretty long. Now you have the new fast pass, which is Genie Plus, Lightning Lane. I don't think as many guests are using it as Disney expected. If a lot of people were using the Lightning Lane as was expected, then those standby queues would not be as long. But I think that people are saying, look, I'm not going to pay anymore. I'm already spending an arm and a leg to just get into the park. So the standby lines are pretty long. And for that matter, I think that the Lightning Lane lines are probably short. I've been getting reports from a couple of friends down there, and they've said that the standby lines are long, but don't always go by the posted time. Mm-hmm. So if it says an hour, it's maybe 40 minutes. If it's an hour and a half, it's maybe an hour.
It's definitely random. Like I said, we got into the Magic Kingdom one time, went straight over to Buzz Lightyear, and it said 40 minutes, and we were on in 15. But then we walked across the way and went to Space Mountain, where it said it was 55 minutes, and it was an hour and 15 minutes. So it was very random. But there were a number of people who were going Lightning Lane when we were on there. Like, they would, and I was wondering if that was causing a wait for the standby, because there's so many people doing Genie Plus and the Lightning Lane, and so they're put behind. Like, you have to wait. And as they let people through. So I don't know. It might be a little combination of both, you know, people not wanting to pay, so they wait online. And then there's a lot of people coming through the Lightning Lane causing more delays.
I remember Michelle mentioning something to me one time, and I think she's right about this big time. That is that when we had Fast Pass, lanes and we had standby lanes or lines or whatever, depending upon how the cast members interspersed the two lines, things pretty much worked well, depending upon how well they did things. For instance, maybe you let two people in fast pass lane or the lightning lane in for every one person who's in standby, but you don't do like 50 of one and then one or the other, whatever. I think it's a craft that you have to learn as a cast member. And obviously each attraction is different. You've got what is known as continuous loading attractions. Then you've got show attractions and stuff. I think that there's so many factors that and components that go into how well you can navigate attractions and go through it with attractions. And I think we're still in the learning phase.
So here's the final question tonight for you guys, and I'll give you mine after. Are you planning to go back anytime soon? And when do you think you're going to go back and for how long?
Well, yes, I have reservations for spring break. And I'm nervous about it.
Explain.
Because it's always felt so easy. And I've felt like I could navigate my way around, but I'm nervous about it. I'm nervous about the planning. I mean, honestly, I need a break and I'm completely okay if I just sit by the pool and, you know, just like you and Audra, go have a cheese plate and some wine. But, you know, I would like to go on some attractions, and the loss of the spontaneity is really worrying me, because my home DVC is Beach Club. That's where I'll be. And every day, normally every night, I would go into Epcot, just wander over through the International Gateway. And it's charming and fun, and I can stay, I can leave, whatever. And so I'm nervous that I'm going to have a frustrating experience when I really need a break. I really need a good spring break in the place that I love. Right. So that's the plan. And also to go on the Wish in August. So that's already paid for, just a 4-day cruise, but nervous about that whole experience too. So I guess it's just really one day at a time, you know? Yeah.
Mike,
the flight was amazingly, it was like double what normal prices from New Hampshire. It was like shocking.
Crazy. So. Yeah, because now they've got to pay off all those losses for the last 2 years, right?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the flight, Michelle, because it seems like the cost of traveling to Florida and enjoying what you normally would enjoy seems to be high. Flight, airfare is high, rental cars high, the you know, obviously the food is high down there. You've got all kinds of increased costs. So I think that, you know, that is something that is expected every year. Prices go up. But I think the spontaneity is really a big deal. And I think that for many people, if I had to make a suggestion, I would say don't make a park reservation until you wake up. Then make the park reservation if you can, or the night before. Because you may wake up and say, you know, I know we wanted to go to Epcot, but I really would like to go to the Magic Kingdom today. And you can't until 2 o'clock because you're going to the studios in the morning. It's just one of those things. I think the spontaneity, Michelle, like you said, that's a big thing with me. Mm. And as far as the attractions go, I think attractions have kind of faded away for me in the over the last couple of years because of the lines and stuff. I think that there are some attractions which really touch me in a very strong way, and that the Mickey and Mickey Runaway Railway, I think that touches me in a special way. I think that's a pure Disney attraction that we haven't seen in a long time. Things like that I would wait a little bit longer than others for, but there are some that it's just not worth it. And it's not worth an hour of my time. And like you said, just walking to the park sometimes is nice. Seeing people enjoying themselves, but also I hate to see people getting stressed out in the parks. And I'm wondering if the next time any of us go, we're going to see a lot of frustration. I remember last summer, remember when we went to Rise of the Resistance, we saw people really confused. We saw people talking to cast members, and I felt badly for the cast members. They had to explain everything. And, you know, uninformed guests are going to be frustrated and stressed guests. At least we have some experience, so we can figure out a way to somehow.
Yeah, well, I will say, yeah, I agree. From our previous trip, we wound up doing so much less than we normally would have done on our trips. The kids got bored. I mean, granted, they're older, but they just couldn't, we couldn't get on anything that didn't have a wait. So it was sort of frustrating. The thing is with the, it, out of, my wife was just like, we're not doing the Genie Plus. I just refused to play this game and we didn't get it. But it was also so confusing. Like, you can do it here, but you can't do it. I can't imagine people who don't know what's going on trying to navigate that app and trying to figure out how to get on attractions, how not to wait too long on things. You know, and the sad part too, like I said, one of the big ones was everybody's staring at their phones. You know, it used to be a communal experience. Like, you would walk through the parks and you'd see a kid running and you'd laugh, and like the kids are running and the parents are with their phones in their faces because they're trying to pick out the next attraction. And so, you know, my wife keeps saying she wants to go back down for a couple of days. Basically, we our annual passes run out in August and she wants to get her money's worth. So she wants to go like once or twice more for like a quick weekend. But even just with the thought of, well, we're just going to go down, like you said, and do wine and cheese parties around the property and not really worry too much about attractions. But I, you know, like you, Mike, there's certain ones I want to see. Like I did like Ratatouille. I thought it was fun and I'd like to do it again. I want to go on the Runaway Railway and I want to see some of the ones that I didn't see a lot of, and maybe some that are going to be going away. I don't know when they're going away. Like, I want to go on Spaceship Earth again and sort of get it in one last time before they rehaul that one. I want to go on Splash before they rehaul that one. Because I don't know when the next time I'll go is. So would you advise people to just get up and go at this point, Mike, if they're like looking forward to it, or would you tell them to wait?
It's a tough question to answer, Chris. I think it would depend upon if they are first timers, if they get to go once a year or every other year. That's a completely different animal than someone who is saving up 2, 3, 4 years to take their family down for 5 days and spend $10,000. I think that there are things, well, I guess an example would be my daughter's family. I've been trying to discourage her from going during COVID, during this current mode or phase or whatever. And I would say that for most people, I would discourage them. I think that Michelle makes a good point though. She knows what she likes. She knows what would be something that she would enjoy. Walking around the parks, maybe going to an attraction here and there, but not worrying about, okay, I got to make sure I get my money's worth. I got to go to Splash. I got to go to Space. I got to do Big Thunder. I have to do Mickey Runaway Railway. I have to do the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror. I think everybody has an individual kind of set of buttons that they like to push when they're down there to get them to relax. For Michelle, I know she loves just relaxing by the pool. Watching the water pageant, watching a few other things. I'm a little bit like that. I don't really care about, you know, getting my money's worth for my annual pass. I think everybody is different. So it's a really tough question, and it depends upon what they want to get out of it. If they want to get a lot out of it, then they really have to sit down with the vacation planner, and that vacation planner has to be very, very good in drawing out what those particular clients want out of the vacation. That's a long answer. I know it's a very tough question to answer.
Well, not to let Mike speak for you, Michelle, but how do you feel? I mean, he's saying this is, you know, you get out of it what you want.
Yeah, I think for me, what I realized last summer is that my priorities were shifting just because of my fear of getting COVID and not wanting to, you know, my career is, I have to be very organized, very task driven all the time. I don't want to do that on vacation. I just want to go with the flow. I would say in the past, and I've been a DVC member since 2003, that I don't think I've gotten my money's worth out of the resorts. And so there was a big shift for me last summer where the resorts became a big deal and I enjoyed them and I spent time getting to know them. I would say, even though it's not my home resort, especially Bay Lake Towers and that whole time there, and also Old Key West. So that maybe it's just because I'm older and my kids don't go down with me anymore. My priorities have shifted. I'm not sad about that. I feel like that's okay because that's what I need right now. I am sad about not having a choice of feeling like I can just wander into Epcot when I want to, or I felt relegated. It's not the right word, but I felt that my only option for most of the time I was there, and I was there for a long time, was Disney Springs, because I didn't need anybody to, you know, I needed a reservation if I was going to dine, but I could just walk around Disney Springs whenever I wanted to. And so that was the option that I chose way more often than going to a park. So, you know, as Mike talks about his daughter, I'm just sad. I'm sad for people who, you know, and like your friend Chris, who may not go down every year. And even we know friends who live down there who are like, you know, we're not dealing with this baloney. We moved down here because we love Disney, but we're not dealing with this. It's just too much. So it's just I've said it before. It's just a sad feeling, but I'm also okay. You know, I've kind of resolved if I go down, and I am going down in March regardless, that I'll just sit by the pool and read and
yeah.
go to beaches and cream, and, you know, that's okay.
Yeah.
I'll watch the Epcot fireworks from the bridge and.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, I do feel bad for the people with young children, because even if you're doing the Genie Plus system, there's going to be waits and the kids are going to have meltdowns, and it's going to be, you know, especially the summer, they're going to have hot times. If they're waiting in lines, I can't imagine having like a 9-year-old kid sitting in an hour line. I mean, they all have their phones and they're going to play on their phones or do something, but it's going to be torturous. Unless you've got money, it's not going to be the most enjoyable time. So yeah, I'm with you.
The funny thing is, I mean, it takes money just to walk in the door. It takes a lot of money. It's not everybody can afford that.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's why my wife was so adamant about paying for the Genie Plus, because she's like, we already spent just walking in the door besides our annual passes, which were over $4,000 for us, and the races, which probably cost us about $2,000 for the four of us. And then, the hotels for another, you know, $5,000 or $6,000, depending on, I forget the because we were there a week, and then the airfare, which was another, you know, $1,000, $2,000, whatever it was, and then car service, and then now just to enjoy it, I got to spend another $15 plus whatever else. And I did say to my friend, though, get in the parks early if you're not willing to pay for this stuff. Get in and race through everything. Although there were times where we weren't able to enjoy. We had early magic hours, I guess. I don't know what they're called now, but for the park guests. And we went into the International Gateway. We got in early. We went straight over to Ratatouille before the parks had legitimately opened. By the time we walked around the bridge and got there, was an hour wait for Ratatouille before the parks had opened.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's definitely an issue with that. So, you know, if you've got young ones. Now, probably the people that are listening to this are all the adults who are probably have kids who are either grown or they don't have kids, and they're, you know, more of like us who are just Disney nerds. So take that for what you will. But
Chris, before we sign off, I have one question. I don't recall if you've mentioned this, but when you were there during race weekend, you did say that you went into Epcot to watch Harmonious.
Mm-hmm.
Did you leave the park immediately after Harmonious, or did you stick around for a while?
We actually did leave, and it wasn't so bad.
Okay, that was my question.
They're doing a better job of corralling people who are getting onto the buckets, Skyway. Whatever, Skyway. So it wasn't bad, and it didn't look like there was that. I remember you telling me there was a wait that you saw that went all the way back to the beach club.
Yeah,
it hadn't gone that far. I think they were doing switchbacks in there now, and so that probably changed the line. So it wasn't so bad, but, you know, this is all a work in progress, right? I mean, it's sort of trying to figure it out as you go. And
all learning, yeah.
Yeah, it really feels like we got our degrees in Disney, and now they've changed the curriculum, and we don't know what we're doing. I really honestly, like, this is the first time I felt like I didn't know what to do. And my family always looked to me to tell them, okay, this is what we're doing. And I was like, everything is 90 minutes wait. Like, it was like 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And I didn't have an answer like, all right, we're going to go on to Pirates because it's only 15 minutes. And then we're going to you know, run over, because none of them were. I mean, I'm trying to think if there was anything that was like 15 minutes, but
honestly, one of my favorite things we did was going around the Skyliner to all the different
resorts. We did too.
We just traveled back and forth, and
we did that too. We sort of did like
little
the
hobos.
Yeah, oh, we went boy. To like a hotel and walked around and took a look at it.
Yep.
Like I said, the Wine Bar George was a thing going down to, like you said, Disney Springs was wonderful. It was just sort of like you walk. Everything for us was just walking around looking at things.
Yep, exactly.
But, you know, you could walk around and look at things anywhere for a lot less money, you know? So I don't know. I know it's sort of negative, and I know everybody's, but, you know, it's interesting that we as insiders know this stuff, and I'm starting to hear from people who don't go as often or don't keep up on this stuff and how confused they are now. I can't imagine as we move forward and you know, COVID kind of diminishes and people start to go back to a regular schedule and want to go to these parks and have no clue what they're
dealing
with.
Let me just rewind for a second. This is pretty powerful. Mike Scopa is telling his daughter not to go to Disney
World.
Yeah,
I know, right?
So, and that's amazing.
It kind of says it all, right?
I did push for her to go 2019.
Yeah, but she didn't. She decided right now, you're saying don't go.
Well,
don't take my grandchildren to Walt Disney World.
No,
don't do it.
Yeah.
That's
and at one point I was going to take my grandson. Remember?
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah.
So. It's rough. It's and who wants to be like this? We're the biggest Disney fans. We're the people who keep the dream alive. So it's rough. So sorry to hear, but hopefully things get better. And they'll start to learn their lessons. But for us, anyway, that's just going to wrap it up for this episode of Mickey Miles and More. If you want to reach out to us, please let us know how we're doing. Send a message on Twitter at Mickey Miles Pod. For Dr. Michelle Scribner-McLean, Mike Scopa, I'm Chris Eliopoulos. We'll see you on the road and in the parks. Bob J. Peck.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.